I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation, and today's show, the world-famous Peachtree Street. We've got West Peachtree, Peachtree Battle, Peachtree Industrial, Peachtree Dunwoody, Peachtree Walk, and Peachtree Place, plus 64 others or so. But there's only one Peachtree Street, and finding the beginning of that is like finding the Fountain of Youth over on Ponce.
It starts in the south in name, just south of downtown, where it transitions from Whitehall Street. And of course, that's a vestige of the old separation between South Atlanta and North Atlanta. But it's the same street. It's the same right-of-way, and it runs all the way down through the West End, through Adair Park, and ultimately turns into Main Street down at College Park and through Hapeville. So it actually runs, I would argue, from the airport all the way up to Brookhaven in terms of the way that it's perceived of as a continuous street.
As you go north out Peachtree, it's just like an archaeological layer. It's like a timeline of architecture. You could drive down it, and there's 19th-century buildings. And then there are early 20th century buildings, and there's mid-20th century buildings, and there's late 20th century buildings, and the further you get out, the newer the buildings are. So
you can actually read the history of Atlanta by driving from the beginning to the end of Peachtree and all of the sort of various ways that we thought about developing different areas. Most of the areas along Peachtree, and if we continue it south and start with the West End, were individual cities that were annexed by the city of Atlanta as it grew.
What happened in Atlanta, it had a very linear growth. So that's where it sort of was a strip. It's ironic because Atlanta's a city of strip development. Peachtree was kind of a strip. And so grand houses were laid out all along Peachtree. And where Midtown is was a early 20th century suburb. So there were just one large house after another along Peachtree Street.
Parts of Peachtree that are between the city of Atlanta or the old city of Atlanta and Buckhead are developed in the manner of sprawl, let's say, which are disconnected cul-de-sac subdivisions that are built without any kind of connection to their neighbors. And then certainly, as we move beyond Buckhead up into Brookhaven, we see the beginnings of the sort of sprawling development that continue and are expressed in probably the most prolific example in the country up Peachtree Industrial Road. So if you consider that length of Peachtree, then yes, sprawl is probably the predominant land use pattern in the entirety of the street.
Just sort of the human scale of Peachtree has been lost. It's not a pedestrian environment.
Well, we're certainly not the flattest or fastest 10K.
I think that's the main thing that we've lost is this sense of livability.
There was...
Vanished in Atlanta.
Clearly a desire to see Midtown, especially at that point, not necessarily be a place to drive through, but a place to go to, which in its previous life, it had become somewhat of a racetrack.
We start up in Buckhead in, you know, kind of the shopping mecca. We're at the, you know, Lenox and Phipps Plazas where we stage all 55,000, which this year is now going
to
be 60,000 participants.
Just to get from the northern suburbs.
And we
into
take
downtown.
Runners down through, you know, really cool areas of Atlanta with Peachtree kind of being the, you know, the avenue to showcase Atlanta. We love
the highest priority,
you know,
for the community was to create a walkable, livable community that provided that urban living, working environment that can be hard to find.
But I think it's coming back now.
Today's guests are senior urban designer and lead certified architect David Green with internationally renowned architecture and design firm Perkins & Will.
Peachtree Street tells the story of the history of the way we plan cities over the last 100 years.
Mark McDonald, a preservationist, the CEO and president of the Georgia Trust.
We've lost more buildings to development pressures in the early 20th century than we'd lost from Sherman's army, that's for certain.
Tracy Russell. She's the executive director of the Atlanta Track Club and literally runs the Peachtree Road Race.
You know, it's interesting to me. I rarely can go somewhere where I don't, you know, meet someone who's either run it once, run it 25 times, or have been a spectator. There's, you know, 1 if 2 degrees of separation to this event.
And chief operating officer of Midtown Alliance, Shannon Powell, a real placemaker.
The community wanted to see itself not as a series of single destinations, but as a community, as a place.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. Today, Peachtree Street.
Peachtree as a street is the conceptual heart of Atlanta. It's this very interesting street that winds through all these different neighborhoods and has a very specific and different response from each of these different neighborhoods. And so in that sense, it's not really seen as one continuous street in the way that the Champs-Élysées, say, would be seen. It's really based on the context of the neighborhoods that it passes through. And I think that's part of the value of it in a varied city like Atlanta.
Given that, it's amazing to consider how few of us actually know where the name Peachtree comes from.
The general consensus was that it was named after, you know, the sort of notion of a peach tree. And Georgia, of course, is known for raising peaches, so it all seemed to make sense. But in fact, it's really named after a pine tree, and it's named after the pitch tar that comes from the pine tree. So it's really pitch tree that was somehow transitioned to peach tree, probably to give it a little bit higher level of gentility over the years. But it really comes from a very sort of banal evergreen tree that we see throughout the state.
And once the name Peachtree caught, well, it cross-pollinated and spread and spread. Now there are more than 70 Peachtree streets of one variation or another, confounding and humoring drivers, lifelong residents, and visitors alike. But the reason for this Peachtree proliferation is actually quite logical.
Like everything in Atlanta, or almost everything in Atlanta, I think it comes from marketing. And I think everybody knew that having a Peachtree address was great. So unlike Fifth Avenue in New York, where you couldn't just replicate Fifth Avenues in other places and still take the value of that name, people in Atlanta, which has always been a kind of self-promoting entity, said, well, you know what? Why should we just have one peach tree? Why don't we have 37 of them or 50 of them, and we can expand the economic benefits and economic potential through a very simple process. In the 1930s, Peachtree Street, while well known, was not the preeminent linear element of the city. It was merely one of a number of streets that existed in this very dense downtown core. I think it survived as the primary area because it was the central street downtown, and it was the one street that was the repository of all of the large mansions, which meant a lot of people that owned a lot of the most expensive real estate in the city had a vested interest in seeing it remain that way. It was promoted as the single most valuable real estate in the city. Again, the sort of self-promotion that we've seen, and sort of emerged in that context. It could just as easily have been, although it wasn't, Spring Street or West Peachtree Street or any number of other streets. But the pre-existing value that was there really led it to become the main address for the city.
But now, it is this very question of value that threatens the existence of Peachtree.
Peachtree is an example of the process that we went through in the 1970s that replaced many of our great buildings with parking lots, only in a very strange paradoxical way, because the recession didn't quite hit the city as hard as it did other areas. And so it was just valuable enough an asset to tear these buildings down and replace it with parking, because there were just enough people working downtown that allowed them to generate income through this process.
I think that we have to take the built environment as we receive it. I mean, it's given to us by people who make these decisions before us, and we have to do what we can with it, do the best we can with it. So, you know, it's a lot of fun to sit around and talk about how much better things were in the old days, but that doesn't ultimately do any good. So what we have to do is try to make it better, and I think we really should, mature preservationists should be making decisions not based on what's older, but what's better. So if you have a building that's threatened with demolition, you have to ask yourself, what's the exchange value of this? If we may lose this, but we may gain something that's ultimately better. And as preservationists, we have to compromise all the time. If we don't compromise, we lose buildings. Most of the times in our culture these days, it's a negative exchange. What we're getting as a trade for what we're tearing down is not very good. Usually we're getting a strip center, something that is only going to be here 20 years, and then it's going to be abandoned and you're going to move someplace else. But every now and then we get something that's actually better.
Of course, we want every building to be as well designed as it possibly can. But I would take a mediocre building in terms of design that places 500 additional people on the street every day to a very small, very elegantly designed building that does very little to reinforce the sort of urban activity that we're trying to generate.
So we have to balance that and look at urban development, I think, through that lens rather than just this simple lens of, oh, if it's old, it's got to be better, because it's not always.
But who decides what is better and how? This is the very question put to Shannon Powell and the Midtown Alliance.
We did over 100 surveys throughout the community, from everywhere, from churches to, I gave one survey to somebody that was blind, which was an interesting exercise in how to describe what I had to describe what I was seeing, because this was a visual preference survey. And we gave it to the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, just whoever would take it from the community.
And a visual preference survey means
what? We would show you an image from either Midtown, somewhere in Atlanta, somewhere from another city, and say, do you like this image? Give it from a positive 10 to a negative 10, positive meaning that you liked it, 0 meaning it was neutral. And also, is it appropriate for Midtown? Is this the vision that you have for Midtown? And from that, we had over 1,000 surveys. We were then able to compile and say, okay, this is what the community has said that you're looking for. This is how you want this community to look when it grows up. That I think at the time we had 66% vacant land in Midtown. I think we still have a good bit now, about 33% of all of Midtown. But we said, we need to know how we're going to grow and how we're going to develop over time. And so the visuals helped us to say, okay, this is what the community wants. This is here where the priorities are. We need a physical master plan that says how we're going to grow so that we can grow in the best possible way, and that we can articulate what the community wants and can have a larger vision about how we get there.
Complicating all of this is the very nature of Peachtree, both its shape and its function.
Peachtree is sort of a double-edged sword for Atlanta, and most cities that we think of as sort of traditional cities are really known more for their core, for a central business district or an area of town that's an expanse that's made up of a district.
When we started the blueprint process, we went out and said, what is this community? Is it an office park, basically? Is there going to be retail? A huge arts community. You've got Piedmont Park on the eastern side. You've got the botanical gardens. We've got the Fox on one end. So what is it? Is it an arts district? Is it an office building district?
Peachtree, while it's known around the world in the same way that Broadway is, it hasn't operated in the same way. And it's become this kind of linear spine that connects all these different things, which has produced a situation where we have density or development spread along its edge. So we kind of have density in downtown. We kind of have density in Midtown. We kind of have density in Buckhead.
People wanted an in-town. They wanted an in-town living opportunity. They wanted to live in a city.
But we don't really have this central core. And so when you think about Atlanta, you think about it in terms of a string of things happening along Peachtree, as opposed to a road or a street, primarily a street, that's set within this larger city. You would never imagine Broadway as something other than a street that works within the system of the grid in Manhattan, the Commissioner's Plan of 1811, in the same way that you think of the Champs-Élysées in Paris as an integral part of the city itself. It never takes precedence over the city, whereas Peachtree, I would argue, takes precedence over everything, and it's produced this sort of linear radial pattern that we have in the city that's deprived us of a kind of central core.
I was brought in 1996, and I can remember walking down Peachtree Street at that time, and if I got anywhere off of Peachtree Street, I would be very skeptical about where I was and what was going on, and I would hightail it back up to Peachtree really quickly. And when I got to Peachtree Street, what I could count on was a gas station that not sure was really operating as a gas station, empty buildings. I mean, between 5th and 10th Street, there were only a few buildings that were even being occupied at the time. I remember there was a Crystal, and when Starbucks came in, we were just celebrating. We had a baby shower at Starbucks because it was such a big deal to have a national retailer to come into the market. I mean, it was a really big deal. And so what what I've seen in that 15 years is dramatic.
The idea that where nothing previously existed, for the most part, you now have things that are animating the street. So you've got these restaurants and boutiques and banks that are causing people to be able to live in these areas. And what we really need to have are thousands and thousands of people living down here.
One of my favorite programs and one I'm personally very invested in is the Streetscape program. The Streetscape was just a flat-out plan for how do we improve our sidewalk conditions. It's what kind of lights are we going to put in? Is there such a thing as a furniture zone, which is where you put your street furniture? What's the tree plant? We needed a tree canopy. It's hot. Here's how wide the sidewalks need to be. Here's what a furniture zone.
The right-of-way for Peachtree for most of its length is only 80 feet. 80 feet is an incredibly small right-of-way, so it's not the same as the sort of boulevard that you would see that's an expansive, multi-lane, very wide sidewalk system. And so it presents its own sort of problems because while we envision this as this very prominent element running through these different areas of the city, it's in fact a very small public right-of-way. So we have to rethink the way this thing works. And, you know, in some areas where we've got five or six lanes of traffic, it turns into something which is nothing but road, which is primarily about getting cars north and south or northeast and southwest, wherever it is. And so it leaves very little leftover space for all of those other things that make a street. And I think that's fundamental to the way that we conceive of this.
If you think about Midtown, Midtown was designed for essentially a single-family community. You see some of these small old houses. Well, the sidewalks were designed at that same time. They were designed to be for a single-family neighborhood. So they were completely and have been completely inadequate for the density that Midtown is now experiencing. So they needed to be wide enough so people could walk side by side. A big part of making this community work was saying, okay, we need lights because people are going to walk, and they're going to walk at night. So they not only need to see to drive, but they need to see when they walk. Lights are one of the best ways that we can provide public safety. Those were the priorities. So we have this enormous plan for all of Midtown, including Peachtree Street, which is an $82 million program, and we are in the process of implementing that.
We're listening to a composition by Jennifer Higdon titled Cityscape and its final movement, aptly named Peachtree Street. Higdon grew up in Atlanta and was just this past year awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Music. Commissioned in 2002 by the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, the piece interprets the sounds and combustion of the street. Through her music, Higdon gives us her experience of moving through and along Peachtree. But this is still an open question for the city. What do we want that experience of Peachtree, not just to sound like, but to be?
Part of the richness of the city is moving through the city, and it's really a matter of how you move through the city. And I would argue that sitting in a car for 45 minutes in stop-and-go traffic on Peachtree Street is not the best way to experience the city.
Beyond driving, shopping, and gazing out of our office windows, nearly 60,000 runners experience Peachtree via the road race every 4th of July.
For so many here in Atlanta, it's an institution. It is what you do on July 4th.
And you've been doing this since 1970, right? Started with 110 people.
Yes, 110 finishers. It was $2 to run the race. There were 13 volunteers and three women out of that 110 that started and finished the race. So it was very small. And I'm told that those that ran it said they had quizzical looks from those driving down by the, you know, beside the runners thinking, what is going on here? You just didn't see people running road races in 1970, the first year. They gathered at Peachtree and Roswell Road right near the old Sears building. And the course took them straight down Peachtree, very fast first 3 miles because it is a nice downhill. But once you get to Peachtree Battle, Peachtree Creek area, that's when you start to begin the climb that, you know, in the running world, it is now fondly referred to as Cardiac Hill. We certainly have some fixtures that have been a part of the event for many, many years. One of them is Sam Candler, who's Dean of Cathedral of St. Philip. And every year he's out there with holy water and he's blessing the runners as they come by. And many people make sure that they're able to get onto that side of the road so they can, you know, get his blessing as they pass him. Right there at people like to call, I guess, Jesus Junction in Buckhead area.
We start up in Buckhead in, you know, kind of the shopping mecca. We're at the, you know, Lenox and Phipps Plazas where we stage all 55,000, which this year is now going to be 60,000 participants.
And we take runners down through, you know, really cool areas of Atlanta with Peachtree kind of being the, you know, the avenue to showcase Atlanta.
And this is the most important street we have in the city. Its primary focus should not be about getting automobiles north and south as efficiently as possible. If that's really what it's about, then we can reevaluate the way we address Peachtree and we can make it an 8-lane highway. The state and the city can do that if they want and if that's what the general population wants, but I don't think that's what we want. I think that we really want this, and this is my experience working with different neighborhoods all the way from the sort of beginning of Peachtree up north past Buckhead. People want to be able to walk. They want Peachtree to primarily be an area where they can walk from their houses or their condos or their apartments and use it as a public space where they have dinner, where they talk to friends, where there's a free exchange of ideas at the most basic level. And that's hampered by the perception that we need to have efficient flow of traffic. So we're stuck in this sort of conundrum. We want all this stuff. We want to be able to walk from our house to the lovely restaurant on Peachtree. But we're not willing to give up the convenience of the automobile. And so these two things are at odds. And in an interesting way, Peachtree Street in this sense is a demonstration of all the problems that we have in the city of Atlanta.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio, brought to you by Perkins and Will. Today, Peachtree Street. More than anything, to change the role of Peachtree, we have to reevaluate this relationship between the buildings and the street.
At its core, it's very simple. We wanted buildings up to the street. We wanted street-level retail on corridors such as Peachtree Street. We wanted parking decks to be not look like parking decks. And we wanted doors on the street. Windows, and to some extent, it's a public safety. We want you to face the street. We want the doors on the street. And we want windows so that people can see in and people can see out. One of the places where you run into the greatest number of public safety problems is when there are no eyes on the streets. And that's how we felt like we could get from where we were to a truly walkable, livable, urban, successful city center.
There's an amazing series of photographs that show the parcel where the Peachtree Plaza is. I guess it's the Westin now. A kind of iconic building, an iconic John Portman building that in 1864 was this amazing mansion and then turns into this, in the 1940s, this great sort of post-war multi-story building. And it really shows you the transition that's occurred. So it goes from something which was primarily residential to something which was really about the civic nature of the street, the fact that it was the binding element of the different owners and uses along the street, to something that was really about, in a colloquial way, turning its back on the street. The public realm at that point really became secondary. And so we move from the destruction of these iconic buildings to the reconfiguration of Peachtree through most of Portman's buildings. And while they're interesting architecturally, they really did provide a sort of disservice for the city because they took pedestrians and removed them from the street in a very intentional way and allowed people to move through this system without ever really coming in touch with their neighbors.
When you think about Chicago, you think of the Miracle Mile. Big major cities that have a street-level retail environment. It enriches the city. It gives it life. It creates a more sustainable environment. I mean, there are all kinds of reasons why it's a real positive for the people that live there, the people that work there, and people that are investing in it long term. And so what the Midtown Alliance, part of the planning process that's evolved is that there's an opportunity on Peachtree, really between the Fox Theater and the High Museum. So in that stretch of Peachtree is an opportunity to have 1 million square feet of retail space. Today, of that million square feet of retail, about half of it has actually been built. So you have the built.
You know, the interesting thing about Phipps and Lenox is they are on Peachtree, but I would argue that they're not on Peachtree for the same reason that Macy's was on Peachtree downtown, which was really the address. They're on Peachtree because Peachtree turned into an arterial connection to downtown at that point. When it was developed in 1959, it was in the middle of agricultural land. And it was really about getting access from the downtown area of the city into this sort of new shopping development. And both of those developments, Phipps and Lenox, care so little about the Peachtree address and the fact that they're on Peachtree that they've done everything they can to remove themselves from the street so that your experience of being in Lenox Square has nothing to do with your experience of being on Peachtree Street. It has done everything to suppress its relationship to this larger public realm that we've talked about, and interestingly, recreate that internally. The idea at this point in time was that the sort of utopia of the shopping experience would be buffered from its surroundings. So the street was primarily seen as not a place to inhabit, but a place that moved cars from point to point. And so it wasn't a pleasant environment. So the parking lot actually becomes the buffer between Peachtree, which, now imagine this, Peachtree, which is seen as a detriment to the development, and then you buffer it with parking and you create this sort of pristine environment at the interior of the space. It's exactly the opposite of the old Macy's building downtown. And that dialogue between those two buildings shows the fundamental shift that we went through in those years.
When you look at preservation of historic districts in Atlanta or any place, really, you know, what you're trying to do is save the district and its texture and its whole warp and weave rather than just isolated buildings. And you can compromise the integrity of a district by allowing some modern building in that destroys the street infrastructure as you can tearing buildings down. So it's touchy business.
What you really want is enough of the building that reinforces the street as a space so that you understand yourself in the street, not on the road, but not enough so that it becomes oppressive. You're walking that line between enough and too much development along these areas.
Ultimately, it helps when there are a lot of historic buildings. When I go to Europe, for instance, I just got back from Paris this fall, and I noticed that very clearly that there are modern buildings in Paris, but there'll be one modern building in a six-block area of 18th and 19th century buildings. Well, that's a context that really works. When you flip-flop that, and you have one historic building surrounded by modern buildings, it doesn't really work as effectively. I mean, it really makes that historic building look like a sort of a museum piece. It makes it look like it's something sad about it. I think it's very simple. If legally, I think there should be a law, and this should be not just Atlanta, but all cities, that you have to keep your building up, that you should not be allowed to just let it be demolished by neglect. So you can go and ask for a demolition permit and be denied that, but you can own a piece of property and be a irresponsible landowner and just let it deteriorate slowly, and there's really nothing that the law can do about that. There are laws, they're called maintenance laws or anti-demolition by neglect laws, which require property owners to keep their property up. And if they don't, the municipality can enter the property and make the repairs for them and send them a bill for them. And Georgia cities have been very reluctant, even in Savannah, to do that. And that's a shame because that's a really effective tool to keep buildings from getting too far gone. And once they get too far gone, they lose their architectural elements, then it's much easier to justify tearing them down or letting them fall in. Just this year, there was a Philip Schutze commercial row building between the Lutheran Church and St. Mark's Methodist Church on Peachtree, and it was torn down overnight with no notice to anyone. First I saw about it was the pile of rubble that was up there. They didn't try to salvage anything, just bulldozed it, just because they wanted to act quickly. Which is just about two blocks down the street from the Fox, south of the Fox. Yeah. It's now a parking lot. The Lutheran Church had been wanting that for a parking lot for a while. A couple of grand old apartment buildings right near here on Pershing Point, near where West Peachtree and Peachtree come together. 1920s grand old apartment buildings that were torn down on a weekend without a demolition permit. A developer just figured better to pay the fine than it was to ask permission. So I think it's something like $1,000 or something like that. They double your permit fee if you get caught working without a permit. So minimal. A lot of people choose to just pay the fine rather than to go through the process. The economic situation, it's a double-edged sword, hampered real estate development. So it has taken development pressures off of historic buildings that are vacant. That is definitely true. There's a saying in preservation, and people in Savannah and Charleston and New Orleans know it very well. It says poverty is the best preserver, because when people don't have money, they don't remodel, they don't tear down and rebuild. That's what saved Charleston and New Orleans and Savannah, is they were sort of out-of-the-way places that really never got over the Depression, so that's why they were saved. People deride Atlanta for not saving in its heritage and talking about Gone with the Wind, but in fact, throwing stuff to the wind to be gone. That's how it's viewed. It's not the reality. As I have lived in Atlanta, I went to Emory in the 70s, and I've always thought Atlanta is a great city of neighborhoods, and the neighborhood preservation here is a very, very good model of preservation. Neighborhoods like Inman Park and Virginia Highlands and Morningside and Peachtree Battle, they're real success stories. These are, you know, people living there, they don't think of themselves as preservationists. They think of them, these are just really great neighborhoods in which to live. And so, but they're in fact preservation success stories.
The new building that we have at 1315 Peachtree is really amazing. It was always so depressing walking off Peachtree Street up a circular drive and looking into the sort of guts of a parking deck on Peachtree Street and then walking up the stairs on the side of the building to the library. And it exemplified the sort of understanding of the building's relationship to the street in the 1970s, the complete removal or the attempt at removing the building from any pedestrian activity. And so one of the great opportunities that we had, both in terms of the way the building operates internally, but also in terms of using it as a demonstration project to tell people how these things could be retrofitted or modified to become really appropriate parts of the city. I mean, good neighbors, actually, was the idea that we enclosed the parking deck. I mean, imagine a building with limited parking, and the owner, that's also the person that's going to use the building, gives up a third of its parking simply to give something back to the city, right? We understood the value of Peachtree Street as a public asset, and the way to reinforce that was through the creation of this very simple plaza at the front of the building, which allowed the pedestrian to directly enter into the building and not through a parking deck. Giving something up, the convenience of the car and parking, to the detriment of the individual, which is our firm, but for the benefit of the larger collective. And this is really the goal that we have in designing cities. It also exemplifies the larger notions of sustainability, because the building now has the opportunity to continue to exist for another 100 years as a lively, engaged part of the city, and is much less likely to be torn down as a relic of a bygone era.
I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I want to thank our guests, David Green, Senior Urban Designer at Perkins & Will, Mark McDonald, President and CEO of the Georgia Trust, Atlanta Track Club's Executive Director, Tracy Russell, and Shannon Powell, Chief Operating Officer of Midtown Alliance. Of course, I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Perkins & Will.